Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Adam Brimelow, and in this episode, we're focusing on trusts in systems, reflecting the biggest and most far-reaching reforms in a decade enshrined in the Health and Care Act. We'll be looking at how the Act reflects and formalises moves to closer integration, often led by trusts, and how the changing landscape is providing opportunities for providers to adapt and expand their roles to improve care and help build healthier communities. We'll have analysis of the Act and what it means for providers, and a couple of case studies showing how trusts are at the forefront of collaboration and new partnerships that are making a big difference for patients and service users. First, though, let's hear from NHS Providers Interim Chief Executive Saffron Cordery, who told me why these changes matter so much.
This is a really important moment for provider organisations of any type, because what we are seeing here is a legal change to the framework within which everyone operates. And I think it's really important to remember that. So we are seeing integrated care systems being put on a statutory footing. So all of that integration that we've seen increasing over the past few years will now be a legally established set of arrangements. So I think that's really important. The other thing, which perhaps has had less focus within the provider sector, but is really, really important, is the change to the nature of the relationships between central government, NHS England, and organisations on the front line. So we have seen a raft of powers transferring to the Secretary of State. We have seen a number of elements where the role of NHS England will change. So we are going to see things over time look and feel a little different.
So a big change, but in terms of opportunities for trusts in this new landscape, there's a lot to go at, isn't there?
Absolutely a lot to go at. And I think that we talk about change in a negative way, but I think the one change that we should really welcome here is the fact that we all know the direction of travel now. So we've been waiting a long time, in a sense, to know how far these changes will go, what they will mean, and that change is here now. And we know that ICS is on a statutory footing, integrated care boards, integrated care partnerships. We are on solid ground now to know how to chart the way forward. I also think that we also know what hasn't been done in this legislation. And that might be a strange thing to say, but we know what we've got the opportunity to go at in terms of continuing to push for a proper long-term workforce plan. And I think that is another element that we shouldn't underestimate. So there is a lot to go at, and it's a big opportunity. But the biggest opportunity is to make good on this commitment to integration, to thinking about how all local organisations work together more effectively, and we focus on collaboration being the name of the game.
And encouragingly, we know that members have really embraced this theme of integration, haven't they? And it's something we're going to be able to talk about a lot in the coming weeks and months, trusts in systems.
Absolutely. It's the integration and collaboration agenda has never been more important. The pandemic showed us so clearly that local organisations working together, supporting each other, planning more effectively will bring about better outcomes, whether we're in crisis mode or not. That's not to say it's an easy journey, and that's not to say that all organisations don't need support on that journey. And I think our focus at NHS Providers is to support the role of provider organisations within systems, so support the role of trusts within systems, and make sure that trusts have everything they need, the support, the understanding, and the development opportunities that they need to play a really effective role within systems. And what we're also going to be thinking about in terms of trusts within systems is to make sure that the environment is right for trusts to be able to do their best and offer their best to the systems they're working in.
Saffron Cordery there. So the Act is a wide-ranging piece of legislation, but what are the key elements for trusts? A question I put to Miriam Deakin, NHS Providers Director of Policy and Strategy.
The key provisions for providers and for the health and care system as a whole are around the establishment of integrated care systems. So putting ICSs on a statutory footing in a two-part model. So including integrated care boards, which will plan, coordinate, resource service provision across a larger population footprint than a CCG, and partnered with integrated care partnerships, which are a broader alliance, including local government and other partners that the health system wants to work with. So the core thrust of the Act is very much around system working. ICSs will go live as of the 1st of July, and there are some other related provisions in the Act which are worth mentioning. For example, the introduction of a triple aim. So that means that decision makers will need to think about quality, health inequalities, and resourcing when they make decisions about how to provide services. The CQC, the Care Quality Commission, has also been given a duty to assess systems as part of its regulatory framework, and ICSs will develop five-year plans to plan for the health needs of their population. So there's a whole bundle of measures there, Adam, which are really about the establishment of ICSs, which, as we all know, we've been moving towards for some time, but this Act places them on a firm statutory footing. A couple of other measures that I'll just mention. The Act helps tidy up the national landscape. So it finally disbands Monitor and the TDA, the Trust Development Authority, formally, brings them under NHS England more formally, changes the relationship between the Secretary of State and NHS England a little bit, allowing the Secretary of State to offer more direction to NHS England, and also brings NHS Digital, Health Education England, NHSX under that umbrella of NHS England. And it places the Health Service Safety Investigations Bureau on a statutory footing as well. So broad-ranging legislation in many ways, but the key focus for providers and for our members is very much about the establishment of system working.
So broad-ranging, as you say, and a pretty convoluted legislative process, and one where we were able to secure some important wins for our members.
Absolutely. We were really active, largely behind the scenes, working really constructively with the department, with political parties of both sides, and with a number of other stakeholders in different partnerships to try and get the legislation into the best possible place it could be for the sector. So a few areas where we're pleased that we had some helpful influence include protecting some of the flexibility that integrated care boards will have when deciding who sits around the table of that board and how they best meet local need. We thought that an enabling piece of legislation which wasn't too prescriptive would work in the best interests of our members. Then local areas can decide who sits around the table and what works best for them. We were also really pleased to put some safeguards around some new provisions which allow the Secretary of State to make decisions about local service reconfigurations. So we feel that we've tightened that up a little bit in partnership with others, including NHS Confed colleagues and the King's Fund. So that provision is still in there, but there are a number of kind of guardrails and safeguards around how the Secretary of State can use those powers, which protect whoever is in that position and protect local services as well. We're very pleased that we've managed to constrain some provisions around foundation trust capital expenditure. So the Act now reflects an agreement we had reached with NHS England back in 2019. NHS England will only set a capital limit on a foundation trust as a last resort. There are some provisions about how that's reported transparently to the public, and limits will automatically cease at the end of the current financial year. So we felt that was a big win for us, acting pretty much on our own on behalf of our membership. We also worked hard on the establishment of HSIB, so that's the Health Services Safety Investigation Body, removing coroners' access to protected materials. So that was all about maintaining safe space, allowing those taking part in those investigations to share information fully and without fear. So essentially allowing HSIB, in our view, to fulfil its remit.
So we've helped to ensure we ended up with a better Act. What would you say now are the immediate challenges for ICSs and I suppose the role of trusts within them?
Well, beyond the very pressing challenge of just setting themselves up, which I understand is no mean feat in itself, ICSs are tasked really to improve outcomes in population health, to tackle inequalities, enhance productivity and help support the kind of broader social and economic development of an area. So I think it's going to be a challenge for ICSs to do that in the current climate. That's no mean feat in itself, and they will have to somehow balance that broader, longer term view with tackling an operational environment which is very fraught, and where we know that we need to focus short term on recovering care backlogs and balancing the books. So I think within that, providers will be critical. Providers are very much in and of an ICS. There's no separation there. Most of our members see themselves as being engines of transformation, the engines of delivery within an ICS, and we would absolutely agree with that. So there's going to be huge scope, I think, for trusts to play a fuller role, firstly as anchor institutions, supporting a large population, supporting a large staff base. They're also basically sitting on, they spend the vast majority of the budget, they employ most of the staff. So through provider collaborations and different ways of working together, we would hope that trusts and providers would actually have responsibilities delegated from the ICS or the ICB, and that they would gain more responsibility in really driving through some of those improvements, recovering care backlogs, working together in different ways.
Yeah, you mentioned the way that responsibilities, activities may be delegated. And it's important to note, isn't it? This isn't just about ICSs, but different configurations and different footprints, such as provider collaboratives and partnerships at place as well.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that the landscape is becoming more complex in that regard, and that different ICSs are likely to have different configurations depending what works for them and their population. So key in provider collaboratives at scale is really the idea of reducing unwarranted variation in quality. So that's about providers working together to raise the bar for patients across the piece. They also want to make best use of their collective resource. And we've seen that in how providers have been offering each other mutual aid during the pandemic, tackling the elective care backlog through use of hot and cold sites across a larger geography, or the work of our mental health providers who've been working together for some time to drive up quality, particularly in specialised services. So, but these are different ways of working. There's huge opportunity there, but it will be different for staff. They might have to work on more than one site, for example. That might be very new to them. And it's a different leadership challenge, I think, as well, to be thinking about managing that level of provision at such scale. And as you said, Adam, as well as thinking about scale, providers and their system colleagues need also to think about place, those smaller units of activity where we want to be offering person-centered care, wrapping primary care, social care, health services around the individual.
Miriam Deakin. Next, we hear from leaders on the ground who in different ways are adapting successfully to the new landscape. First, Dr. Ifeah Kocha, Oxlius NHS Foundation Trust Chief Executive, on the South London Partnership, which started in 2017 as a collaboration between three trusts in South London, Oxlius, South London and Maudsley, and South West London and St George's. He told me how this collaborative has developed and expanded its activities.
We began with the ambition to bring people closer to home. That was really what set us off. And since we started in 2020, we formally took over the commissioning responsibilities of three specialist mental health provider collaboratives. Secure Care, £83 million, CAMS Tier 4, £21 million, Adult Eating Disorders, £6 million. And then in 2020, with support from our CCG commissioners, we took over Complex Care Budget, £30 million. And what we've achieved since then has, to my mind at least, been quite remarkable. So, for example, we've reduced the need for hospital admission by 32% for young people. We've managed to reduce forensic patients being out of area by nearly 40%. And in addition to that reduction in them being out of area, we've also reduced readmissions by about 66%. For our complex care, we're doing quite a lot in terms of bringing people, stepping people down. More than 100 of the people that we've had in complex care have now been stepped down. And quite apart from that, we've been able to make savings. So it's been great value for the NHS. And with those savings, we've again put in new resources, new teams. And so, for example, in our children's services, we have it near, it's not quite 24 hours yet, but we've got an extended crisis team that works in communities, across EDs, across all of South London, to ensure that families are supported when their young ones are in crisis. Furthermore, we've created more pathways into communities for forensic patients. And so they're not all bound up in hospital, but they can, we can actually support them to return into communities to begin to engage in courses, you know, and all manner of things. So there's been quite a lot that we have managed, and we continue to strive to improve things.
You've certainly accomplished a great deal there. What have been the key ingredients to that success?
I think one fundamental thing has been making time to prioritize this. Communication has been critical. So the three trusts, not just the leadership in terms of the boards, but also the fact that we have been very keen to engage clinicians and services as where possible, families. So those have been really, really critical. And I said at a recent conference that, you know, I'm the third chief exec since the partnership started. And in fact, this is the case for the other two trusts, that they've also had a change of leadership. And yet the partnership continues. And the reason for that is the fact that we've engaged those frontline clinicians delivering services, we've engaged service users, and so it's kind of run quite well. And what our boards have done through our committees in common has been to ensure we've got robust governance, but light touch. We're not bureaucratic, you know, so we agree things that the teams, the clinicians have felt necessary and important next steps to going forward.
And how do you see the role of your trust developing within your ICS?
Yeah, so to answer that, I think it would help to just paint a picture of what we do. So Oxley's, as I said, in Outer South East London, provides mental health services to our local boroughs. We provide community health services, a couple of our boroughs. We also provide all of health in prisons across Kent and some in London. And then finally, we run the Queen Mary's Hospital, which is not an acute hospital, but nevertheless has no less than six partners who provide all manner of services from that site, including theatres. And so our role seems to be quite varied in our ICS. So we have a part to play in the elective recovery program, supporting our acute through the theatres we have, through the facilities we have there for MRI, scanning, etc. And then, of course, we have a role to play through our community health services in freeing things up in ED, supporting acute trusts to discharge and create capacity. And, of course, we are now engaged in this drive to increase virtual beds in the community to therefore reduce the pressure on acute. And then, of course, we have a role to play in mental health delivery across South London with our partners, South London and Maudsley. So that's from a very practical point of view. But of course, we've been quite fortunate as a trust to be in soft one. I'm not sure if your listeners know what that means, which essentially means that financially we're comfortable, leadership is good, governance is good. And so we're not entangled in any of the regulatory controls that might come with not being in that position. And so that kind of frees us up and enables us to be nimble in supporting our partners. And my role, I've got to say, has been largely part of that system, the ICS executive, thinking with colleagues about how we might support our other partners in driving and delivering what's expected, not just from national or London, but also what's expected for our population.
Dr. Ifi Okocha from Oxleas NHS Foundation Trust. And finally, we hear from Somerset NHS Foundation Trust and Yeovil District Hospital NHS Foundation Trust Joint Chief Executive, Peter Lewis. These trusts, soon to merge, are leading partners in their ICS, which is unusual in the way it operates on a footprint that most people would recognise as place rather than system. Here again, the foundations for this partnership working are long established and helping them provide better services for patients.
We've sort of been at this since about 2017. So it's just worth summarising what we have done. So within the Somerset system, which is a relatively small system, we have already merged. There were three foundation trusts. So we've already merged two of those. So we have Somerset FT, which is now a provider of acute services, mental health services and community services. So that's quite unique in a way in terms of what we're trying to do. And now we're in the process of merging with the Yeovil District Hospital, which I'm already chief exec of both organisations. So we'll have one NHS provider across the whole system. And that I think that is really important of how, therefore, do we provide something different and have a different approach towards the population. It really enables us to put population health, if you like, at the centre of what we're doing and to therefore try and integrate care around the people that we're caring for. So we've got a number of examples where over the last 3 or 4 years, we've brought mental health and acute services together in a way that probably wouldn't have happened before we completed that organisational alignment. So whether that's about children's services, some really good work between the acute paediatric ward and the CAM service, whereas the history was probably certainly young people who were on the acute paediatric ward and were quite difficult to care for. And there was a lot of blame, if you like, of the CAM service and the CAM service blaming the acute service about how they were caring for these children. We're now very much in a place where they're working together and are coming together to solve problems and creating something different. And we've got many examples, almost in a bottom-up sense. How do we bring teams together around patients or people and start solving problems? So we've done the same with mental health patients coming through the emergency department, where I think we have a completely different experience for those people now than we did pre-2018, because we use some of our experts by experience in mental health, working with our ED team, working with our improvement team to change that whole experience when they came into ED in crisis or looking for some support. So I think the big thing for me is just bringing the organisations together has given our colleagues confidence to work differently and to maybe walk in each other's shoes in a way that they wouldn't have done before, and therefore seeing a different perspective and leading to different solutions.
And presumably you're bringing that mindset to your work with a widening array of partners within your system.
Definitely. And Somerset, whilst Somerset is a system, other people would look at the Somerset footprint and say it looks more like place, probably, in some of the larger ICSs. So we very much feel that in terms of collaboration, this is for us, this is not about NHS providers collaborating. It's more about the opportunity for us as an NHS provider to be collaborating much more closely with primary care, with social care, with the voluntary sector and other partners. And whether we're doing that across the whole system or whether we're doing it at neighbourhood level or at locality level, as we would refer to it. And there's, again, mental health, some really good examples of some quite innovative work that we've been able to do with the voluntary sector, where we've essentially subcontracted services to a consortium of voluntary sector partners, which has enabled us to really transform some of our community services and transform access to community mental health services in Somerset. So that's one of the big pluses for me. It's how do we work with those other partners, whether they're in the NHS, whether they're in social care, with a much more local focus.
And I guess that points us towards the future, doesn't it, in terms of the way you envisage the role of the trust evolving within the ICS?
Exactly. And some of the conversations we're having, and I think the beauty of what we've got in Somerset, it allows the ICB to really have that strategic focus and really be thinking about what outcomes does it want to change for the population of Somerset. But it also then allows us as a provider to think about the delegation of some of those functions. Do we become a lead provider for certain things and therefore are much better place to work almost with that array of other providers, almost that the group of providers that are working locally around parts of the population, and how do we how can we help coordinate that and how can we work with them to improve some of those outcomes? Yeah, definitely. And I think the other thing about that is the Fuller report into primary care as well, and how we think about PCNs and working in neighbourhoods, because we've very much aligned our community services around the neighbourhoods, which are aligned to PCNs in Somerset. Now, we haven't cracked this, but I think we've got a good basis for thinking about some of the recommendations in the Fuller report of how do we better integrate primary care at PCN level with those community services. So the building blocks are in place. We now need to make that happen.
Peter Lewis finishing there on the evolving role of trusts within their ICS. That's it for this time. I'd like to thank all the contributors, Saffron Cordery, Miriam Deakin, Dr. Ifya Kocha and Peter Lewis. It's absolutely clear there's a big role for trusts in systems and the wider integrated landscape. And as Saffron said, NHS providers will be working to support them in these partnerships. To find out more about the work we do, you can visit our website, nhsproviders.org. Remember, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.